Hi, everyone. I'm Sydney Long, guard at Gibson Southern High School. I was introduced to Lead 'Em Up last year, and it helped my team and I so much, especially this past season. Our team worked extremely well together. We all played for each other instead of for ourselves. Doing Lead 'Em Up almost every week was able to help us work on communication and many other things. For me, Lead 'Em Up taught me everything I needed to become a great leader and teammate. It helped me make sure I walked into practice and games with energy and ready to go, which helped everyone on the team do the same.
You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up podcast, powered by Chick-fil-A.
Hey, thanks for spending some time with us today. Excited to jump into today's topic with a good friend and a legend in leadership, Mr. Jason Wells, founder of Athletes on Purpose, former college and pro athlete, been part of PGC basketball. Been part of a variety of Nike basketball, tremendous resume of impact for young people. And you posted recently, in fact, it was December 13, 2021. So at the time of this recording, almost a month ago, You posted something on your Facebook that said, "The because I said so days are over." Because I said so days are over. You know, it's interesting. That line kind of got my attention. I sent you a message right away, Jason. And I said, I want to talk about that because there are some coaches that are still holding on to the I'm the authority. I'm the one in charge. The dominant personality, right? That type A strong will personality, the because I said so. There are coaches still holding on to that. There are many coaches that have transitioned completely away from that. There are some that are on the fence, but I think it begs a question. The because I said so days are over, why? Why should they be over? Yeah. Coaches are an authority figure. They're in a position of authority. Shouldn't they have the right to lean into the because I said so, because I'm in charge? Why do they have to be over, Jason? Why do you think they're over?
So first off, what I mean when I say those because I said so, as I throw up my air quotes, those days are over is literally from a standpoint of because I said so, period. That's what I mean by that statement. The way that we, and I know I'm a little bit older than you, but the way that we were parented, coached, and taught in our schools, on our teams, at home, those days of because I said so. That's what I meant, period. Because I said so, period. So, of course, coach, leaders, they are always going to be in that authoritative point. And why they should be over is because we are dealing with a generation of people, young or even now older people, our age and older, that are leaning into the why. And so, as I think about that statement, because I said so, that doesn't leave me any space for a why. And so for you and I, we weren't asking the why, because the why would have prompted that because I said so into probably more aggressive either language or behavior. But for my son, for student athletes that are out here now dealing with coaches that are dealing with 18 to 22 year olds, they want to know the why behind the what, because you mentioned before, as you were introducing, until they get that why, they probably won't truly buy in. And my little coin phrase that I use with the teams I work with and the coaches I work with is belief over buy-in. Like I'm moving away from the buy-in statement, because in my own terminology, I believe if you buy in, you're buying in ultimately to what I want, and I want you to believe in what you want. So if you buy in, I feel like you can sell out. So just, and nothing's concrete about that. It is my terminology that I use with my coaches. I speak about clear speak. Let's just make sure we're saying the same things and we understand what those things mean, as opposed to, you know, trying to explain everything and have a bunch of different interpretations. So for me, when I say the because I said so days are over, I'm simply saying it from a standpoint of because I said so, period. That because I said so now either has to be forecast with beforehand or concluded with, and here's why I said so.
Jason, you just dropped some nuggets there. If you're coach listening to this right now, you're probably like me taking some notes or want to take some notes, right? If you can buy in, you can sell out. I love that little line. Like that line is golden right there, that we should be doing more than just trying to get them to buy in, but to truly believe,
sure,
right? And you can't believe something oftentimes until you've got a deeper understanding of it, right? Like if the depth of the understanding is limited, then you'll just buy in because that's what coach is saying. But if you truly want to believe it in your heart all the way through, there needs to be a depth there, right? There needs to be an understanding. You need to be able to articulate it and live it accordingly. The big kind of differentiation that you made very clear is it's not because I said so in and of itself is gone. There are still moments of authority that need to be present in the coaching space. We need the authority for structure, for order, right? Like we can't have 15 people on a basketball team all making the calls. We need that authority. The point and the difference is the period. The fact that you brought that to attention, that is what I agree with. The because I said so period, no more discussion. That is the end of the road. The buck stops with me. You're either going to jump in and deal with it, accept it the way I've laid it out, or else, whatever that else would be, that is an unhealthy manner. And for me, I think as leaders, we always have to be looking, you know, leadership's a game in many ways, not in the sense that it's trivial, right? Like it's a little childish game that doesn't have any effect. No, it's not trivial in the sense. It's a game in the sense that it's strategic. Mm. And it's strategic because we should always be trying to find ways to improve. We should always be trying to find ways to enhance, to build, to get better buy-in, to get more commitment, to get more engagement, all these little games. And when you're dealing with people, it's the ultimate chess match. It's the ultimate trying to understand the other person, trying to push the right buttons, trying to get them to see things they can't see, all these different dynamics. And as leaders that pursue greatness, they're always trying to figure out, how do I get it to that next level? That is why the why is so important, because the why will get us closer to the next level. As you mentioned, the because I said so period may get the buy-in forcibly, right? Yeah. You have to be in because I said so.
Yeah.
But if I can present it and explain and get you to understand and show you how it's going to benefit you and show you how you're going to grow and receive all these benefits of joy and progress and all these things, then all of a sudden I'm going to now get more of you.
Sure.
So taking the time to actually go through the why and jumping away from the because I said so, it's actually going to help you get more results. It's going to help you win. So when I hear that the because I said so days are over, yes, it's because we're dealing with a different generation. I mostly just go, because it's going to get you better results.
Yeah.
You're going to get better buy-in. You're going to get better. You know, those players that are willing to do anything for their coach is going to come as a result of individuals that understand the why.
Sure.
That's where I go. This is about winning. You're going to win more, right? And in sport, that's the goal, right?
It is.
I think
so much of this too, Adam, remember, and I'm not a huge generational guy, and that's what most people understand. So whether we're talking about baby boomers who parented, coached, and raised us, or whether you're talking about Gen Xers, of which I fall into that category, or millennials, which are now, I think this is the first year that millennials are now 40, if I'm not mistaken. So it's not that much space between myself, who's the back end of a generation X, and an older millennial, or you get down into the Gen Zs or whatever that is. I think the biggest separation is understanding that Gen Xers specifically, we were parented, coached, and raised on fear. It was fear, but because I said so could be a final statement, because anything after that, we were scared of the consequences. These younger generations, they're not raised with that fear. Call it good or bad. That's on you. It's a reality. They're not driven by fear like we were. So because I said so now often leads with, all right, now what? And it could come across as a challenge, or it could come across as, I just want to understand more. But yeah, that plays back into it, that fear piece. As you were talking, I was looking for, which is my newest read, my Will Smith book. This was a birthday gift for me. And I am infatuated with Will Smith because I see him and I see a little boy from Philly. And you've heard me talk about me just being a little boy from Cleveland. And there's this one section here in chapter one. This is 10, page 11. And he's having this confrontation with his dad, who's a strong military guy, but also heavy alcoholic and drastic mood changes. And it says, his dad is asking him, who's in charge, you or me? And he's got this hesitant response as my voice quivers, you are. And his dad's response is, because if two people are in charge, everybody dies. So if you're in charge, let me know, because I will defer to your leadership. Mm. And I hear you say that, and that's exactly right. Yes, parents, coaches, teachers, employers, CEOs, they are still respected and viewed as authoritarian figures and titles. But if everybody's leading, we're in trouble. So, yeah, we got to have some understanding behind it. And I just feel like it all goes back to, it's not fear-based and fear-driven like it used to be 30 years ago.
So let's say I'm a coach holding on to the because I said so. Right. Like I view the why discussion and that extra as unnecessary. Like, yep. We've got a job to do. We've got to get in here. We've got to get better. This is the game plan. I'm in charge. Why are some coaches, and it's certainly a smaller number year after year, right? Those numbers are decreasing. But why are some coaches still holding on to the because I said so period?
Because they don't have to put in the personal accountability to do anything, bro. Like, and that's the word that I use a lot. The phrase that I use a lot is personal accountability. You know, the overarching buzzword would be self-awareness, which for me is still intimidating to coaches, men of a certain generation. You know, you can get really specific about it, but when you start talking about words like self-awareness, even for those that understand it or are curious by it, they can very easily hear that word and all of a sudden just make the decision that I don't want to be a part of that, as opposed to personal accountability, specifically within the athletic space. Everybody's accustomed to some standpoint of the word accountability or attracted to it. And we know what that means. We know how it shows up. And then the personal piece, because accountability is such an attractive buzzword in the athletic space, many people overlook the personal accountability. But for me to be resistant to change takes out my personal accountability. I can sit here and I can blame, complain, and defend my own methodologies behind this thing, and I don't have to do anything because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, we start incorporating personal accountability. What more can I do in this situation? And that's a different question. And that's a different... I posted something, I think it was right after that, and it was a video of me working with one of the teams that I work with. And I was kind of going in, you know, just about, we're talking about their roles within the teams or whatever. And it was only like a 30-second snippet, but the caption to that one says something about tough love, of which you and I, again, were raised with tough love. That was the phrase that was often thrown into the mix of how we were being given information or like it was tough love. And I first heard John Gordon say this, and I've adopted it, but it's not that we can't use tough love. It's just we got to flip those words around. And now these younger generations are about love tough. As long as they know how much you care about them, you can be as hard on them as you want to. You can get away with because I said so, as long as you've established a relationship that allows you to do that. Last couple of years, we've been looking at Coach Izzo, whether it was Aaron Henry a few years ago or the young man going into the halftime tunnel, I think it was last year. And we take those isolated events as if they are some catastrophic thing. And I've heard older people talk about it, younger people talk about it. You can't coach like that anymore. And very few people, especially outside of the Michigan State basketball family, actually looked at the situation and said, how about the relationship that Coach Izzo has formed with his players allowed for that situation to happen, as opposed to just isolating that situation and saying you can't coach like that no more?
Yeah. You know, we talk about that all the time and lead them up. The we cool to my guy.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Like when your relationship's just in a place of like, yeah, we cool, right? There isn't a foundation. There isn't major substance there. You compare that to a relationship where you'd look at someone and say, oh, that's my guy. Guess what? Those two relationships allow for different type of interactions. Just the reality of the matter. Okay. But you know, the because I said so, the folks that are holding on to that, going back to that question, fear-based leadership is the laziest form of leadership.
No doubt.
Right. So like, why are so many coaches still holding on to that type, or not, maybe not so many, but some? It's because it's lazy and it's easy.
Yep.
It's the laziest form of leadership, because I can simply say, this is how it is. You need to change. I don't need to change when that's my leadership style. I say, this is what we're doing. You either like it or you get out. Okay. Yep. So one, I don't need to change. I don't need to adapt. I don't need to put in any work to quote unquote get better as a leader, because I can just default back to, because I said so, the fear-based leadership. So why are so many coaches holding on to it? One, it's extremely lazy and easy. And there's a lot of coaches willing to do that. Secondly, it is self-serving, right? Because when I focus on this is how it's going to be because I said so, I don't need to care much about you.
Yep.
I don't need to spend much time getting to know you. I don't need to take the time communicating the why, the deeper message, having the side conversations after practice, right? The text chats. I don't need to worry about all of that. Right? I don't need to care about all that mushy stuff. I'm just going to tell you what you need to do. And that's the bottom line, because I said so. So it is lazy. It is also self-serving, because all I have to do is worry about myself when that is my leadership approach. Right? And they justify it in many ways because they reference back to coaches who have experienced success that way.
Absolutely.
Right? They will pull out of their hat 1, 2, 3 coaches, examples that are kind of their fear-based leader spokesperson. Okay. And they'll say, you know, I remember so-and-so. Here's what they never talk about. They will call out the spokesperson that has experienced success, but they never talk about the losers.
Mm-hmm.
They never talk about the losers. What about all the losers, coach? Hey, coach, what about all the people that have engaged in fear-based leadership because I said so, not caring about the athlete, this is my way or the highway? How about all those that got fired so quickly from their job? What about all those that created the most dysfunctional team environment? What about all those that approached it that way and had players literally doing the bare minimum under your leadership? What about all those experiences? I don't have the data. I don't know the numbers. But I'm a guess there's a whole heck of a lot of negative experience, horrible results from that type of approach. That would just be my guess, Jason.
Yeah, yeah. And also, with just a little bit more depth, you talk about they pull out the success stories of other coaches. What if they are the success story? What if I do have a couple state championships under my belt leading this way? What if I do have a national championship under my belt leading this way? So now I am the success story. So what you mean I need to change?
You probably stumbled upon some talent. You probably stumbled upon some talent.
Yeah. Yeah.
You probably had a run where you had the best 2-year graduating class in the history of the school, and you experienced major success. And now the moment you need to get more out of players who don't have that natural talent, right? Where you've actually got to put your leadership on display, right? Where you've got to actually show your true coaching prowess is not working too well for you, right?
Yeah.
So,
bro, you know my story just as much as anyone else. I saw it happen. Coach Waltman, God bless. Like, to play for him for 1 year, and you've heard me refer to him before as a Bobby Knight disciple. He's literally Coach Knight's disciple on those great IU teams of the late 80s, early 90s. He's the assistant. And when he inherited my senior year team at Indiana State, and consequently the guys that he recruited for the next 3 or 4 years, they were the last of that breed of kid that you could pound into the ground and get some response from them. Even the kids that he recruited towards the end of his tenure at Indiana State were, he got fired because they aren't responding to that anymore. And yeah, it's just one of those things to where I think he was kind of the guys, that generation of, I'm holding on to what I know because it's all I know, as opposed to opening up a space that allows me to be me, to be able to grow, evolve, and develop.
Hey, this is Ashley from Chick-fil-A, and this is today's leadership nugget. Looking to grow and develop in your own leadership abilities? I think emotional intelligence is the number one characteristic a 21st century leader must embody. Two key traits of emotional intelligence are self-awareness and empathy. For us to have a positive impact and inspire motivation in our team members, this requires that we are able to discern what's happening internally with ourselves, along with the people around us. To lead a team to a more effective workplace, we must know each other's styles and preferences to work as a team to find common ground in all we do. Leaders who embody high emotional intelligence can, 1, communicate their vision more effectively, 2, improve their persuasion and inspirational speaking abilities, and 3, ensure appropriate responses to stressful and sometimes confusing situations at work. Regardless of the many theories out there about what makes a good leader, it doesn't happen overnight. Remember, leadership is a journey. If you're looking to be a better, more effective leader, or if you're working on personal growth, discerning your emotional intelligence is a great place to start. Now, let's jump back into the episode.
I'm so glad you brought that up. You're absolutely right. And that's, it's coming from a deep place, like a deep foundation. That's what they've grown up in. That was the culture that they kind of grew up as a coach. And now they're just regurgitating it.
Yep.
Right. To the next generation, rather than truly stopping and thinking, is this producing the best result? Is there a better way? And I think one of the traps you fall into, if you are a because I said so period type coach, right, is so much of sport is improv. So much of sport is instinctual. There aren't scripts for everything that takes place in sport. Sure. Okay. You can draw up certain things, yes, and have some guidance and some structure. But when you get into the game, things change. And the greatest athletes just have this ability to improv, like to kind of create something out of nothing, right? They're able to tap into their instincts and instinctually do things off script, right? That are designed to help. When you begin to build an environment that is a because I said so environment, you are limiting the creative powers within the minds of the players.
Absolutely.
Right? You're not allowing them to think outside the box. You're not allowing them to think in a larger parameters because you have now limited the scope to your vision only.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden we are doing ourselves a disservice. In addition, we are reducing our reach. What I mean by that is the greatest coaches lean on their players to be an extension of them, right? What are you seeing out there? Tell me what you're experiencing. Tell me what you're thinking, right? What do you, where should we go from here? Okay. And when you can cast the vision of the why, like you talked about, right? The belief, not just the buy-in, the belief. And I think this is where the belief and buy-in comes to play. When it's a belief and you've instructed the why, and you've painted the bigger picture, and you've shared that and got that player to think that way, that's when you can then tap into that player again and say, help me out. Tell me what you're seeing. Tell me what you're thinking. How would you handle this? What would you do in this situation? That will come from a player that has major belief and understanding into what we're trying to do. You lose that. You lose that if you're a because I said so period type coach.
Man, we're watching it, and we give so much outside respect to Golden State because of the talent level that they've produced over the past few years. And when you look at them now, yes, they still have Steph. Yes, Klay just came back. They still have Draymond, but they don't have KD. And as I look at them as an organization, I see what Steve and the owners are doing. They will be this generation's model, like San Antonio was for us. And yes, Steve Kerr played for Pop, and he understands that structure and how to build. But it doesn't matter. You start getting to this point, man, and Klay's out for 2.5-3 years, and all of a sudden Andrew Wiggins slides in. Or now all of a sudden Jordan Poole slides in. And it's because of the culture. It's because of the culture that's created. It's not because of the name on the back of the jersey. And I'm excited for what Steve is going to do with USA Basketball and incorporating that culture piece again, because, yeah, man, it's leadership. I think that's what's wrong with the country. I know you're notorious for your tweets and your challenges on your Twitter, but it's what we're viewing as a world, is what we're viewing as a country. Like, just give us some guidance right here. We're all uncertain. Just give us some consistent guidance from leadership. But that's not happening. So I don't want to get into politics, but.
Well, you know, it reminds me. So, you know, sometimes when I'm out and about and I'm doing my work with teams, and it's very common that people will introduce me as the speaker or today's speaker, right? Sometimes they'll say like a motivational speaker, and sometimes I'll get leadership coach. It's interesting, Jason, I've actually bought into this new phrase, and I always say, nah, I'm not a motivational speaker. I don't like that phrase. Like, that's not me. Okay. Yep. Like, if I'm doing all the talking right now, it's not going to be a good session, a good 60 minutes. Coach, I don't mind that one, right? I am a little bit of a coach. But for me, I view myself as a facilitator when I'm doing my lead 'em up sessions with teams. Okay. Sure. And when you look at the definition of facilitator, here's why I love it. And it's actually my title for my new opportunity that I'm engaged with down at Towson University, right? In their Leadership Institute, I am the lead facilitator leading their programs and workshops. When you become a facilitator, you are guiding the individual to help them discover the learning for themselves. That's the definition of facilitator, to guide the individuals to help them discover the learning for themselves. And we all understand, like, man, if our players could learn it themselves, that seems to be more advantageous than me just telling them. Like, if I could get them to understand and come to their own epiphany. And that is, once again, a trap that you lose and you miss out on when you become the authoritative because I said so coach. Players don't begin to discover the learning for themselves under that type of leadership. They sit back and they're in such reverence to you as the leader, not in a positive manner, okay, where they look, revere you and admire you. They're standing back in a unhealthy reverence of fear from you, like, you're the boss, you tell me what to do, I'm just going to do what you say, because if I don't, I don't want to get in trouble. So when you're under that type of leadership, there is zero finding the answers yourself. There is zero finding the learning for yourself. And that is a major disservice to the individual, especially when you're tasking them with the responsibility to go on the field or go on the court and figure it out for themselves at times.
Sure.
Okay. So I think if we had to sit there and say, like, maybe this facilitator role is maybe a mind, like a little word swap that coaches could reference to remind them, like, you know what? Actually, when I go into today's practice, man, I don't even want to be a coach. I actually want to move all the way. Certainly don't want to be the because I said so period coach.
Sure.
But even sometimes I find myself being a little bit more authoritative, laying up, you know what? I actually want to step back to the opposite. I actually want to step into the role of facilitator. Today, I'm just going to chime in enough, challenge enough, question enough to try to get my players to figure it out for themselves. Because if I can get them to figure it out for themselves, man, we'll be that much better. Because one, at the end of the day, they will have figured it out. So they'll either figure it out from me telling them or them figuring it out on their own. So if I can get them to figure it out on their own, we accomplished that one, okay? They got it. Perfect. That was one of the first requirements. But we also get to gain the value of them having thinking through it. And when they think through it, oftentimes they've eliminated some areas that are not worthy.
Absolutely.
Right? They found through like, well, I used to do it this way. I realized that's not the right way. So boom, they on their own have eliminated some other things we don't want them to engage in as they found their way. We call it the journey of learning.
Yeah.
During that journey, they learn some additional things, not just the end product, which is so, so valuable, okay? I can't emphasize this enough. Because I said so, period, may have been the way of leading years and years and years ago because they simply didn't know better or want to know better or even try better. But now that we've gained over time, anyone that's falling in that realm of leading is simply underperforming.
Yeah. Yeah. So I too have stepped into that facilitator title. And it happened for me in the non-athletic space that I got introduced to. And it's funny because I think back to my very first conversation with one of the partners. And, you know, I'm still doing some stuff with this entity in St. Louis, based in St. Louis, called the Chapman and Company Leadership Institute. And the very first conversation I had with Matt Wyatt, who is a former military guy, high ranking officer in the military, multiple Desert Storm tours and over in the Middle East and things like that. And he asked me, he said, Jason, do you see yourself as a presenter or a facilitator? And I did not know how to answer that question at that time. And I asked, all right, what do you mean? What's the difference? He said, well, if you're a presenter, you're going up, giving all the information. And if you're a facilitator, you're curating the information that's already in the room. Mm-hmm. From that moment, it was gold. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And much like you've adopted the facilitator title, I looked it up just to get the actual definition. But maybe 18 months ago, the phrase Socratic method came across my plate. And it's, for those that can hear the enunciation, it's obviously rooted in Socrates and that great Stoic wisdom that he had. But it says the Socratic method is developed by Greek philosopher Socrates and is a method of dialogue between the teacher and student, instigated by the continual probing of questions by the teacher in a concerted effort to explore the underlying beliefs that shape the student's views and opinions. Mm. That's how I lead. If I'm PGC, it's coaching with questions. You know, if it's Adam Bradley and Lead Him Up, it's being a facilitator. You know, it's whatever it is, but it's that constant coaching with questions because space where I get to explore.
And I'll give you props for that because you do engage in that type of method, right? I think back to our conversations and different things, and I'll bring up certain things and I can see it right now from some of our old conversations where you'll say like, tell me more.
Yeah.
Like, oh, tell me more. Right. Yeah. The Socratic method is almost like the constant why. Why are you thinking that? Yeah. Well, where'd that thought come from? Right. Yeah. Why'd you allow that thought to continue? It's like, it's a constant continuing to probe, but it's ultimately trying to get the other individual to learn for themselves.
I don't care what you think. I just need you to know why you think what you think. Let's explore that. But last thing, AB, is you ask why coaches stay there and things like that. Even if I go walk into practice and talk about, hey, today I'm going to show up as a facilitator. Well, that now puts me back into that personal accountability space of I have to do something to grow, develop, and evolve. And if I'm not in a position to allow myself to do that or don't know how to do that, then that's putting me in a... You have this generation of coaches, let's call it between 40 and 55, that were parented, coached, and raised by baby boomers, and they have fallen into three categories that I've identified. They either teach exactly what they've been taught, because I said so, period. They've either diverted all the way to the other side of the spectrum and now just allow mayhem because I don't want to be how I was parented, coached, and taught. Or they're somewhere in the middle of, gosh, I'm curious about another way, a different way, ways that we can go about this differently than how I was taught. I don't want to do either of those. And that ultimately is what I found to be the sweet spot in the coaches I deal with, is having that curiosity of, yeah, there's a lot of stuff from the past that I want to hold on to, but I don't want to go the opposite end. I spoke with Coach Burson this morning, change with the times, but cling to unchanging principles. There are principles in this thing that don't change. Respect, integrity, work ethic, all of those things don't change. Our method of how we teach them and introduce them as information, you can't walk in and just start calling kids SOBs and MFs no more. You know?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you run the risk? Do you run the risk as a facilitator type coach, right? The opposite of this, because I said so, period. Do you run the risk of not getting compliance from your players? Whereas like the, because I said so, period, coach, they could possibly rationalize in their mind that they're acting this way and leading this way because it's what's going to drive compliance. I'm going to get my players to comply. They're going to do it. Like they're going to recognize the authority. Whereas if I step in and am much softer in that stance, am I going to be able to get them to listen, to comply? Am I going to be able to create structure and order if that's going to be my approach?
Yeah.
So do I run that risk, Jason?
You know how intentional I am with my words. And I know you might have been intentionally poking the bear when you said softer right there. I don't view the Socratic approach, the facilitator approach, that the coaching with questions approach, I don't view that as soft, because for me, the information is still there. The structure and the discipline is still there. So, bro, this is where it really gets fun for me, because the same way I coach is the same way that I parent. So the boys are now 14 and 11 years old. And my 11-year-old specifically is, he wants to know. He wants to know why, and not in a challenging way or a defining way or a non-compliant way, but he wants to know because that's going to give him the pathway to believe. And so for him, I approach him with this. Yo, here's the structure and the discipline of this. And within that structure and discipline, you can explore your freedom and flexibility. I'm giving you the structure, though. You do not go outside of these boundaries. But within those boundaries, it's just like driving in a car. I can stay in my lane. Is it swerving if I never go outside of my white lane? I don't know. I wouldn't think so. I get to play around, or I get to veer this much before I hit that boundary. And now I'm in a place that I don't want to be, or that coach doesn't want me to be. But as long as I'm within that, the triangle offense is a structure and a discipline. But within that structure and discipline, there was so much freedom and flexibility to be able to be creative and explore new options, how they arise. It is the reason that Read and React, shout out to Rick Torbett, but it's the reason that it, because that's all I'm ultimately doing. I am reading and reacting, but within the structure and discipline of these confines. So
yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, that even within this, like there still needs to be an element of structure.
No doubt.
There still needs to be an element of order. But even in those processes, once again, still there is value in explaining the why, even on those, right? Like, right, rather than simply saying, and these are the other things because I said so. Once again, okay. And here's what's fun to challenge about the because I said so, period, coach. I actually love challenging their why. Mm. Because I don't think they always know.
It often goes back to because I said so.
Because they don't even have the why, right? Or because that's how we've always done it, which, yep, shame on us. We all can agree on that's listening to this call that that's literally probably the worst thing you can say in leadership, sure, is because, sure, I've always done it that way or that type of thing. But, you know, Jay, great conversation today. And one that I think is important to have because of the fact that, once again, there is still coaches holding on to this approach. Now, I will say this. The majority of people listening to this podcast on the Lead 'Em Up channel probably aren't those coaches.
Sure.
Those coaches aren't listening to this. It's too much work, right? Yep. They aren't interested in being challenged. They don't want to feel convicted, right? They're not really that interested in getting better. So they're not listening to this, which is irony because we're then holding a conversation for an audience that's probably not engaging much with this particular podcast. Sure. That's fine. Two things. One, if you're a coach listening to this, I really want to encourage you to share it because of the fact that we need this to kind of be heard by as many people as possible, especially those coaches that are. And trust me, I go into schools. I'll take Lead 'Em Up programs where the athletic director has purchased the program for the entire school. Every coach has access. Here's the data after about 5 years of athletic directors who've bought the program for all their coaches, fall, winter, and spring, JV varsity, boys and girls, okay? It is about 70-30. 70% engage, 30% don't. So you can almost say two-thirds. It almost breaks down similar to your little three-tier breakdown. Yeah. A third of those coaches in those athletic programs, they go all in and they love Lead 'Em Up. They're very thankful their athletic director purchased it. They're all in. Then you get this other third that dabbles with it. They'll do some of the exercises. They'll occasionally incorporate a theme. They'll use a team building exercise. They'll use a communication exercise, that type of thing. They dabble with it. They're not all in. Then you've got this other third. They don't even literally open it. Like yep. It literally could be like Coach K on the other side with tickets to like his coaching 101. And I just use Coach K. I'm a Maryland guy. I was just trying to think of a Hall of Fame coach, right? They don't even know what's behind the curtain. They've never even peeked, okay? It could be the world's greatest life-changing thing, and they don't care. Those people aren't listening to this podcast, all right? So we need to try our best to share this because that third are not helping the coaching community. They are not giving the coaching community a good reputation. They're continuing to fuel the negative side of coaching, the stigmas and things like that. That's happening, okay? And they may even be still bringing your program down a little bit, yeah. Right? They could be jeopardizing the reputation within your school, right? As, you know, all their athletic program. Oh, did you hear about their one coach in the building that did that? Like, we want to help kind of plant the seed with them as much as possible. But here's the second reason why this is so important for those listening. Because even though you may not be that coach, there's a possibility and a tendency that that may show up at times within your coaching. Mm. Okay? Yes, you may not be a because I said so coach. That's not your style. Nobody would describe you it. But you know what? That week, 3 weeks ago, after those three, you know, after that little tough patch, boy, you came in like a completely different coach for a period of time. And you remember the year before where things were a little rough, frustration, admin, this rules, policy, you turned into that. We always have to be careful that we don't become the things we don't want to be. And it's possible for all of us. It's possible for all of us. So we have to literally fight and be proactive not to allow ourselves. And maybe this episode is that helpful nudge or that reminder for you as a coach to not fall back into that trap. Because guess what? Maybe you were brought up, coach, taught, led that way. And it's in you. And it's in you. And that's the crazy part, right? It's in me. And it's in you, Jason.
Yeah.
Oh, it's in me. I could be that if I chose. Listen, I know how to turn that back on if I needed to turn it back on. I don't want to, though. But if I'm not careful, it may get turned on without my knowledge. Yep. And then all of a sudden, I have to now do some cleanup, damage control as I try to pull back what I engaged in forward. Got to be careful on that. So, Jason, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you sharing that on your social media about a month ago at this point that prompted this conversation because I believe this is going to be helpful. And I just appreciate your time. Jason, where can people follow along and the things you're doing?
And it's always the easiest place is my name, jasonwells.com. Just spell it correctly, J-A-Y-S-O-N. The tagline has not changed. Spell it correctly because it's all about the why. And then I'm active most on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. Again, if you spell my name correctly, JaysonWells, you will find me.
There you go. There you go. You know, Jason, I always think about you. I think about you a lot because I follow you on social media and we're friends, obviously. But I always think about you a lot during Christmas. And this is so random, but my girl's favorite movie is Elf. And that woman, Susan Wells. You know Susan Wells?
Another name, yeah.
You know, it's Buddy's biological mother. And they're always like, Susan, how do you know Susan Wells? What about Susan Wells? And you're the only person really besides Bonzi Wells that I know that has last name Wells.
We had some battles too. Bonzi and I had some battles in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Y'all went to the well?
So, yeah, see, I see what you did there. I don't know whether I want to call that cornball or not, but I see what you did there.
It's cheesy. No, I'm going to say it for you. It's cheesy.
Nah, man.
That was bad.
And it goes right back to you, man. Obviously, we talked a little bit and shared some of our catching up before you press record, man. I'm always excited to connect with you, bro, and just catch up, and glad our paths continue to cross. And yeah, man, keep grooving.
Hey, appreciate you, man. Till next time, I am Adam on behalf of the entire Lead 'Em Up team. Till next time, have fun and remember, lead 'em up.
We want to take a moment and thank our friends over at Chick-fil-A for partnering with us on the Lead 'Em Up podcast. Chick-fil-A is mostly well known for their incredible original chicken sandwich and those amazing waffle potato fries. But what people might not understand is there is a lot more going on behind the counter. You see, every Chick-fil-A is individually owned and operated by someone who deeply cares for their community and for their team. So next time you get an urge to go buy a Chick-fil-A, remember, it is more than just a chicken sandwich. We are thankful to Chick-fil-A and thankful for you for listening. So until next time, have fun and lead 'em up.